Welcome to another episode of GT Radio, and I'm Tino Magneta. And tonight I have the pleasure of having a very, very interesting person on our show. Welcome to the show, Adriana Giron. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, Tino. How are you?
Good, good, good. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were from, where you grew up, how life was growing up, how your parents were, because I know you grew up in the res, right?
I did. I did. So I was born in Albuquerque. I am from the Pueblo of Isleta here, which is about south of Albuquerque. It's about 15 miles south. I grew up with a mixed family. I had a stepdad, and I had two brothers in my house, half-brothers. And that was a lot of fun. It was a blessing in disguise, I guess. My parents were very hard workers. They instilled a really, really strong work ethic. Family came first, our culture, our traditions. So it was really a good experience living that kind of life on the res, growing up on the res. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, what you said your parents worked very hard, and your stepdad was a firefighter, right?
He was. He worked in the firefighting. He did firefighting for the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Albuquerque. They had to commute both to Albuquerque because at that time there wasn't gaming here. So they both had to commute. My mom worked for the government. She's worked for the government for quite a while. And that's basically what they did. They went back and forth and commuted, and as kids, went to school and came home, did our tours, made dinner, had dinner, waited for our parents, and just kind of lived a simple life, if you will.
Yeah, and you said we didn't really know that we were poor. What did you mean by that?
No, we didn't know. I mean, as kids, we had everything we wanted. We had friends, we had family, we had food on our table, we had clothes on our back. But I never really knew that my parents struggled. It wasn't until later when I grew up and I got older that they really had a hard time. And I never knew that as a kid, and I don't think my brothers did either. So it's just something that, you know, our parents kind of, I guess, hid from us because we had everything we wanted. You know, the neighborhood kids would come over and play in our yard. We'd play baseball until the light on the road went on, and at that time it was time for everybody to go home, and we just, like I said, we didn't know that we went without until we got a lot older, and our parents never made us feel like we were missing out on anything. We were always allowed to play with the other kids and go to parties, and, you know, but we never really knew that our parents struggled.
Yeah, it was like that was the way it was, right?
Yeah, I mean, and to me that was normal. That was my life. That was, you know, what we did. We came home, we played baseball, we rode bikes, and, you know, rode down the ditch bank and played with the neighborhood kids, and it was safe, and that was my world. That was what we did.
When did gaming come along?
Oh, I don't remember the year exactly, but I was about 14 years old, 14, maybe 15, when gaming came. My mom and I only knew that it was here because my mom worked in the pull tab trailer that we had set out of our bingo hall. They built us a bingo hall, and it was actually a tent. So it was one of those kind of pop-up things. In the beginning, the bingo was run by British American Bingo. And like I said, I didn't know that we went without, but my mom did work two jobs. So she worked at the government, and she worked in the little pull tab trailer to kind of set me up to hopefully become successful one day. And she worked the two jobs so that way she'd earn enough money for me to send me to a private school in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is about an hour and a half from north of where we're at off the reservation. So it was a good little deal. We had bingo and pull tabs, and that was kind of how New Mexico, you know, broke in, obviously, to the gaming business.
Yeah. What was it like when gaming came in? How did you guys react to that, and what were people's feelings about it?
In the beginning, there was a lot of pushback because it was new. No one knew what was going to happen. No one knew how it was going to run. No one knew who was going to run it. Where were we going to get the money to start it? No one knew. I mean, it was all brand new to us. And as you know, in my native culture, it's natural to not really trust a whole lot, especially when it came to money and expenses. So it was kind of, it was a little scary. I was curious because, like I said, my mom would, she worked in the pull tab trailer, and you know, I was always like, oh, what are those? What do they do? What do you do with them? How do they work? How do you win? Do you know which ones are going to win? So I've always had a curiosity when it came to the gaming side of it. So her, I guess, kind of starting into it just kind of led me more into it and more me wanting to learn more about what it was and what it had to offer.
Did you when the bingo days were there, did you start seeing some difference in the community from the revenue from the bingo?
We did. So things were changing. Times were changing. After the bingo, once bingo progressed and it caught on, you know, they went ahead and they built us a bingo hall. So, and that building is still there today.
Wow.
And it's a really nice huge bingo area. We use it now as our fun connection here at Isleta Resort and Casino, and that's basically what we use it for. But everything started changing within the community. Things were getting better. Programs were starting to develop because we had this gaming revenue that kind of, you know, went back to the tribes, or to the tribe, I should say. So, you know, they started, you know, doing home improvements, more programs, more books for the schools, just different things throughout the community that, you know, I definitely saw a change in it, and I was relatively young.
Yeah, things started to change. You could see the beginnings of it. Now, your parents really, really looked out for you, so much so that your mom mom and dad worked extra hard to send you to private school, right?
Yeah, they did. They both worked. So my mom especially, she's always been a huge supporter of mine, and I mean, I'm glad because if she didn't push me, I don't know who would have. So, and like I said,
Now,
she just
at
kind
the
of raised my
time,
curiosity in gaming.
you hated it, right?
I didn't like the private school, no. It was in Santa Fe,
Now,
which was
why
about an
was
hour and a
that?
half.
Why was that?
It was the distance, I think. There were a number of things that it kind of wrapped up into. One was the distance because it was taking me away from my friends, away from my little bubble, away from my res,
Right.
away from the world that I had lived in. But I didn't
Your
know.
safety net.
And
Yeah, your safety net. Your safety net.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I was
Yeah.
being kind of plucked out of my ordinary and being thrown into the unordinary for me at the time, and I didn't like it. I resented my parents, and I was upset, and I was angry, and I would call them on a daily basis, begging them to come pick me up, and I didn't want to stay there, and because it was a boarding school, it was away from home. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any, you know, connections. I didn't. I was basically on my own, and I didn't like it. And so, and it was a Catholic education, and that wasn't easy by far. So it forced me to change, and I didn't realize at the time that it was going to be a good change, because I kind of had to open myself up. I needed to make new friends. I needed to change my thought processes. There were other students there from different tribes, different nationalities, and that was completely out of my realm because I had gone to the elementary school here in Isleta on the reservation. So that was completely different. I had to change, for the better, I think. I hope. And now, I mean, I'm glad. I'm glad that my parents sent me there, and I'm glad that they worked hard, and I knew that they were working hard, and I knew that my mom was working another job, and I didn't want to waste her money. I didn't want to be a disappointment, so I pushed myself even more with the help of my parents. So it, being there just taught me a lot of – it gave me a lot of gifts, and I'm eternally grateful for that, because without it, I don't know where I would be, to tell you the truth.
So you think that because it was a boarding school and took you out of your bubble, it actually helped you be independent, right?
Absolutely. I was on my own. I had to learn how to be on my own, and that was something I didn't know how to do, because I always had my friends, I always had my cousins, I always had my aunts, my uncles, my parents. Everybody was there around me all the time, and I was used to that. And in being in Santa Fe away from everybody, that was really awkward for me. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends at the school. I didn't know any of the teachers. I didn't, you know, I had to live there. So that was difficult for me in the beginning. But I had to interact with other students. I had to be someone different than what I was used to. But I'm really glad I did. I've developed a lot of really long-lasting friendships, and I'm still really good friends with a lot of people that I went to high school with, because I was in such a small class.
Got it. Yeah. And what was the, when you arrived at the school and you started into, what were the things that you were amazed about the most?
I was amazed that it was
right.
Absolutely. I was amazed of how small it was and how it was more personalized. the discipline was one of the other things that honestly kind of freaked me out because I didn't have that in my other school setting. But I mean, being in a Catholic school,
discipline, what are you talking about? Like, what kind of stuff?
Discipline, I mean, like education wise, focus wise, schooling, learning, just kind of getting in there and not taking advantage and listening, paying attention, doing my work, turning it in, getting it done, just kind of everything. At that point I was like, well, I guess it's not all about me, because up until that point it was. But then I didn't want to let my parents down. I didn't want to let anybody else down, and I didn't want to let myself down. So I kind of had to change my thought process and quit being so spoiled. I didn't really have a whole lot of discipline. I wasn't a bad kid or anything, but I probably could have used some discipline when I was growing up, until I got sent to the school, and like I said, I had to really buckle down and hit the books, and I mean, because there was nothing else for me to do there, so I had to focus on my studies, and that's exactly what I did.
It was a Catholic school, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I went to Catholic school too. Great, great place. There's a lot of great people there.
Absolutely.
You talk a lot about your discipline and focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there that are going to be wondering and listening. What do you mean by that? Explain that a little further, the discipline, the focus, because it's something that you've brought up a few times in the conversations that we've had.
So when I say discipline and focused, I mean, I wasn't a bad kid before the Catholic school. Don't get me wrong. But I think I felt more that I needed to work harder. I needed, because I knew that one, the schooling wasn't inexpensive by far. I knew that my mom was working two jobs to send me here. I knew that the other kids in my community weren't in the same boat that I was. I knew that. And so I needed to be focused. I needed to have that discipline to get my schoolwork done, because I didn't have anybody pushing me anymore. I didn't have anybody to say, Adriana, is your homework done? Can I see it? Let me take a look at it. You better turn it in. There was no one. I was kind of independent overnight. And that took a lot because I was spoiled. Everything has always been done for me. And I mean, I really didn't even learn to do my laundry until I went to college. So because my parents did everything for me, and like I said, I didn't know that we went without. But I really focused on that to be successful. My mind was set that I wanted to go to college, but I also knew that I needed to follow these steps to get there. So that's what I mean by the focus on the discipline, because I had to focus. I had to discipline myself because no one was there to poke me and prod me and nag at me and say, hey, you need to do this, get your homework done. There, I didn't have that. I was kind of on my own. And it was up to me. Either I was going to sink or I was going to swim. And I swam.
That's cool. What happened after you graduated?
So I graduated. I had learned a few things about myself. In my opinion, I was less selfish, realizing that everything is not always about me and what I want and how I want to do it. I was, at that point, I was disciplined. I was driven. I knew what I wanted. I knew what I needed to do to get there. And I just kind of, I learned to appreciate things. Like I said, I was very spoiled. I was always given everything until I was on my own, and then nothing was handed to me anymore. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. But I learned. It was a very good lesson learned, and I learned to appreciate everything, each and everything, from the sun up to sundown, to the dirt on the ground, to the people that I met, to the, you know, the birds in the trees, to the person that was teaching me how to speak French. I learned to appreciate everything and to not take everything for granted like I felt like I had been previously. I graduated and I went to New Mexico State for a little while. And then my grandfather had passed away, so I came back home and I lived with my grandmother for a while, so she wouldn't be by herself. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna go apply for a job at the casino. And at that time, it was still just bingo, but they had also implemented keno. So that's kind of I started as a keno runner, and then I just kind of progressed from there. My very first job in the casino was at a keno runner, and I think it was called the Sleta Bingo Palace at the time. And gaming became my forte, and I fell in love with it, and here I am.
You said that finance is one of your stronger points, right? You like finance.
Mm-hmm. I do. I like finance a lot. I thought that was the route that I was going to take. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Every aspect of gaming involves finance in some way, fashion, or form. I started in Keno, and then the very next day, or the day 91, because they had you like on a probationary period, I was invited to transfer into the vault. And back then, you didn't really have to go through a process or change paperwork or whatever. They just kind of moved you. And so I moved into the vault. And then after that, I started moving up quickly. So then I was in the vault. I became a supervisor in the cage. At that time, that was when we got Class 2 gaming. So we had slot machines. Gosh, what else happened since then? from there, we had a new building built, which is our current Isleta Resort and Casino. And then they gave us everything. We had table games. We had keno. We had Class 2 and Class 3 gaming. We didn't have any more pull tabs. I stayed at that time in the cage. I was a shift manager, and then I was the interim cage manager. But then there were a lot of issues I think within the tribe and the casino and the management at the time. And so I just thought, this isn't for me right now. I was here for 9 years when I left. So I ended up leaving, decided to go back to school. I worked and traveled a little bit. I worked in Miami, worked in Kansas City, and then had my first son. And I decided I really need to get serious. Now I have a child to take care of. And I decided I'm going to go to UNLV and finish my schooling in gaming. And that's exactly what I did.
Wow. Great, great story. From the time that you went to high school to when you got out of university, what kind of person did you become? Because that was like, you were like totally different, right? And then how did you transform? What were the things that happened?
So when I was in high school, I was like the cool, popular kid. I was the queen bee. I had friends. By then I had already made friends. It was a small class. There was 24 of us in my high school senior class. And there was a group of us that all hung out. We were all really good friends with each other. And so I've developed those relationships. But then as time went on, I learned how to I grew, obviously. My attitude changed. I wasn't a spoiled brat like I was prior to my high school days, prior to being thrown in a Catholic school. The discipline and the focus changes you. And I was a lot less selfish in my mind. I made a lot of changes within myself. It wasn't all about me, and it took me a while to realize that. But once I finally did, then I was like, you know what? This is it. How am I going to do something for my people? What can I do? Because at that point, it wasn't about me anymore. Before, it was all, what do I want? What am I going to do? How is this going to help me? Where am I going to benefit? But after I left the high school, I was like, okay, it's not about me. So I need to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, how I'm going to benefit my tribe. What am I going to do? How can I make the difference? And that's when I decided to go to UNLV to study gaming.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, because you left the tribe, mm-hmm. and then you returned to school, and you said you worked in Miami, right?
I did. Mm-hmm. I worked on a casino boat that went three mm-hmm. nautical miles into the ocean, and then they would turn on our slot machines. I was a cage manager. Mm-hmm. For that vessel. And then I worked in Kansas City for a little while. And then I found out I was pregnant, actually. And then I wanted to come back to have my son here in New Mexico with my family. And so I did. And I thought, you know what? This isn't good for him. This isn't good for me. But mostly not for him. So what am I going to do? How am I going to fix this? So that's when I decided I'm going to go to UNLV. My heart and my mind were already set. And I'm one of those people, like, if my mind and my heart are set, that's it. There's no stopping me. So we moved out to Vegas in August of 2005. And I got into the gaming operations management program there, which is in the William F. Herra College of Hospitality. And I got my gaming operations management degree in 2008. So it took me 2.5 years, but I worked, or rather, I didn't work. I went to school every semester. I took 21 hours, and I didn't take any summers off. So I finished in 2.5 years, and totally worth it. I met some amazing people along the way. And in that program, it's mainly taught by people. Of course, there are professors, but they also have adjunct professors who are from the business, and they teach you things you can't learn in a classroom. attitudes, styles, games, processes, all kinds of different things that they teach you. And I was fortunate enough to have met some pretty awesome people in my schooling. So I'm really glad I did it. I have no regrets at all. That was kind of how I transformed my finance and accounting and cage experience into table games. So I found something new.
Right.
And that was kind of it was something different, completely different. And but I'm glad I did it because it kind of gave me a well-rounded insight, if you will, on gaming as a whole, not just from the accounting perspective. So it was totally worth it.
How did you find, through all this stuff that you did, you know, because now we're at UNLV and we're about to go into another phase of your life, but being a woman and on top of that, being a Native American woman, how did that affect things for you and how did you overcome that?
In the beginning, it was difficult. It was challenging, completely challenging. And I don't know if it's just a stigma or really what it is, but being a Native American woman, being an educated Native American woman, it's very difficult in this business. It's very difficult on the reservation. It's very difficult among my people. And I haven't figured out why. But I don't mind when people ask me questions, and I'm happy to tell them. I'm happy to tell them about my experiences, what brought me to my career choice, how I got here. And I think it's just a matter of time before more Native women start coming into and getting into the business kind of like I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you got to start somewhere, right? I mean, someone's got to start somewhere and end up somewhere. So your path took you way beyond where you expected, but that was because you worked hard and made sacrifices, right?
Absolutely. I worked. Nothing was handed to me by far. And like I said, from my past, it was different because everything was always handed to me when I was a kid, and it just kind of came hand in hand. But now as I got older and I started realizing that gaming was what I wanted to do in my career, it wasn't easy by far. The education piece of it wasn't, the you know, work part of it wasn't, it wasn't easy. And being a woman just kind of made it even more, more of a challenge, I truly believe. But this business, I mean, this is something that I chose to do, and I love it, and I'm glad that I did. I don't think it's something everyone can do, men or women, but, you know, I'm definitely glad that I found it. And I do wish there were more women in gaming, learning, or in hospitality in general doing what I do.
Now, I love this, the next part of your story, because you actually did a stint in Vegas, and this is a very interesting part. So tell us what happened after UNLV.
So when I graduated from UNLV, or prior to me graduating from UNLV, there was a gentleman by the name of Mark Gilbert, he worked at Caesars Entertainment in table games. And what he was doing was they started a program, and he was out looking for students at the college to see if they could, if it could be, or if it was possible to train graduates fresh out of college how to be floor supervisors in the table games department. I wasn't there. I didn't see his presentation, so I don't really know how that whole thing went. But I got a call from him one day, and he's kind of like, you know, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing. And I still to this day don't know where he got my information from or how he knew I was a gaming student. But he just kind of explained everything to me, and I was like, yeah, no, you know, I'm not interested. I had already taken a position with the Bellagio on the strip from a lady by the name of Marie Ramsey. She was the VP of finance at MGM Grand. And luckily for me, I was fortunate enough to do my internship with her that we were all required to do as a student at UNLV. So, and she was a VP of finance, so I was obviously taking an accounting job at the Bellagio. And so I was telling this Mark Gilbert gentleman, you know, no, thank you, I'm fine, I'm set, I have a job, you know, I'm good. And he's like, no, 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 you know, you need to get into table games. You know, there's not a whole lot of women in table games, and, you know, you're Native American, and it would look great on your resume. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not a table games person. I don't want to do table games. And he was really persistent, and it kind of got to where I was like, yeah, stop calling me. But he kept on, and yeah.
Wow.
So the program was, they would teach us all the games, and there were four of us that were selected. They taught us all of the games, and then we would have to go
now,
down and deal live.
Bellagio.
No, no, no. This is with MGM. Caesars Entertainment.
Oh, Caesars Entertainment. Okay. So is that Caesars mm-hmm. Palace, right?
No, it was. We first started our training at the time it was called the Imperial Palace. I believe it's the Link now.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
I know.
So
that's where
we started
all the Caesars people. Right
yeah.
next to O'Shea's.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we started at IP, and
uh-huh.
we learned our games. We had to go and deal our games. So they put us in a rotation. So we were dealing. We dealt at the Flamingo. And then from there, then the supervisor training came about it because they wanted us to get a feel for what the dealers go through as a supervisor. So we did that. We shadowed floor supervisors from all of, I believe there were 9 Caesars properties at the time. And we shadowed the floor supervisors for a week, I believe, and just kind of learned the process, learned what they do, learn how to settle customer disputes, how to write comps, just different little quirks that you have to do as a floor supervisor. And the end result was that we were going to be placed at one of the Caesars properties. One of the guys dropped out. He ended up leaving for personal reasons. Upon completion, there were two of us that were placed at Caesars Palace. I was one, and the other gentleman was placed at the Rio. And so we were told that we were being placed based on our skill set, our guest service skills, how quickly we learned, how easily we are to adapt to our environment, just a lot of different things that they took into accountability. And so I broke in my table games experience in Caesars Palace High Limit Room, which is, there's only two people in the world have ever done that, and I'm super happy to be one of them.
Wow. So what was that like? I know you had some I know you had some issues that you had to overcome, but your solution was really ingenious. So tell us the story.
So it was really hard. It was really hard for me because there again, I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any family there. I didn't have anybody. I was, again, kind of in a new environment, and I had no net to fall back on. I was in the high limit room, which was a completely crazy experience compared to anything that we had been exposed to at Paris Bally's, at Harrah's, at the Flamingo, at O'Shea's, at, you know, IP, anywhere else, at the Rio. So it was pretty brutal. I started in November, and at that time, all the holidays were rolling around. Christmas rolled around, then we go right into the new year, and then we get into Chinese New Year, and it was like a never-ending cycle of work. It was hard for me to adjust in the beginning. I was the rookie. I was the native girl. I was educated. I was a supervisor. and this is kind of the funny part, is I wasn't juiced in. I had no in, if you will. I was just kind of placed here. And there again, I opened up again and started making friends. And I thought, oh, this is what I'm going to do. I came up with this little plan one day. And I thought, I'm going to go find all of the older dealers and I'm going to make friends with them. And they're going to be my friends. And they're going to see that I'm not just some person out of college, some know-it-all rookie. They're going to want to be my friend. And so I started talking with them. I made friends with them. And a lot of these older dealers, all they wanted to be was heard. That was it. And, of course, I was interested because a lot of these people have been there for years and years and years. They, you know, they've dealt to the mobsters. They've, you know, dealt to the owners. They have, you know, seen things that they probably shouldn't see, you know. And so it was a lot of fun. It was a pretty crazy experience, but I listened to them. That's what they wanted. They wanted to be heard. So I listened to them. I built relationships with them. You know, we would hang out and go to dinners and go to lunch, and we all there again got to be this little group of friends and just kind of had fun. We went to each other's birthday parties. We went to each other's weddings and, you know, so baby showers. It was a blessing, and I'm really truly glad I've met some wonderful, wonderful people that along the way that I'm still friends with to this day in Vegas. So when I'm out there, I try to make it a point to go see my friends there at Caesars, and some of them unfortunately have passed on because at the time that I was there, they were a lot older already, and you know, time goes on. So, but that was what I did. I made friends with the old timers and listened to their stories and won their favor, and I was in, and it worked.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What a story. Yeah, and I mean, being a native is one thing, but being a native woman and being in that kind of environment, you were really the only one in the building, right?
Actually, there was another young lady that was there. She was there a few years before I was. But I think she had started in as a dealer, she kind of moved up through the ranks.
Right, you were just put in as a supervisor.
I was just kind of hired in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she had dealt for a long time before she was on the floor. So, yeah.
What did that teach you? How was that experience so valuable for you? Because talk about being away from your bubble. You were away. You were in a different city. You were in the, you know, one of the most prestigious gambling, you know, one of the most prestigious casinos in the world, with some heavy people who had so much experience. And there you are. How did that affect you, that experience?
It was a positive experience. I mean, I learned everything that I could possibly learn. That was when I really, really, truly fell in love with table games. I mean, I had convinced myself already when Mark was trying to get me to go into this program. I was like, no, I'm an accounting person. I want the cage. That was my bubble yet again. But in reaching out or branching out rather, it was a blessing in disguise. And it taught me a lot of crazy things. It taught me a lot of patience. And it taught me, you know, it taught me how to prioritize. It's a lot about time management. It's a lot about organization. Because some nights you're on a game, you know, watching a baccarat game where the guy has a $6 million credit line and you're writing markers and redeeming markers and watching the hand and watching the dealer and taking commission and not taking commission and, you know, paying attention to the surroundings. And then the next minute you're, you know, on $100 a hand blackjack game with, you know, some drunk college kids who were just there to party and have a good time. So it taught me a lot of acclimating to different personalities, giving people what they need, still listening. You know, some people just, they come in and, you know, they only have, you know, a set amount of money, and this is all they can afford to lose or whatnot. And being in the high limit room is it's different. It's quite an experience. Even people with money kind of are limited to their money, to the money that they have to spend on gaming. And of course, we try to get as much as money as we possibly could. But still, they want to be heard. They want to, you know, they want to be catered to. They want to have a conversation. They want you to know about them, who they are, what they do, where they come from. So it's a lot about listening. I watched a lot of people. Baccarat, blackjack, roulette. We had single zero in our high limit room. There were times where I was in a private parlor with a high roller. There were times I was in a public game watching two games at one time. But I had a good support system. My casino manager at the time, he was awesome. He kind of took me under his wing because he knew that I didn't have the table experience. I had the education, but not the experience that most people that are juiced in with or that are juiced in come with to Caesars. So he was a great inspiration to me, and I still keep touch with him. And so it's about building relationships and keeping those relationships going.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. Tell us a little bit about when you went back to Isleta and what happened.
After I left Caesars, I went over to the Cosmopolitan. I worked at the Cosmopolitan for about a year, and then I got pregnant again, and at that point I was considered high risk, so I couldn't be on the floor. I reached out to Mark Gilbert again, and I did some financial analysis for him at Bally Technologies, and then I was having some personal issues, and I had seen that there was a cage manager position open here at Isleta at my home property, and I thought, you know what, I want to go back home. I'm ready to go back home. Mm-hmm. My boys are getting older. It's important to me that they learn their culture, they learn our language, they learn our tradition. And my parents are very traditional. They're very traditional people. So, and I didn't feel like I was disrespecting them in any point by not being here, but I knew that it would break their hearts if I didn't teach my boys our culture. So mm-hmm. I decided to come back home and applied for the job and got an interview, and pretty tough interview, pretty tough crowd. But at the end of the day, they chose me, and I just kind of ran with it. I was in the cage for about 3 years, made a lot of changes, and so far it's so good.
And how did the whole position that you're in now, the GM, CEO, mentee, how did that come about?
So there was I have a really good working relationship with our CEO, Harold Bogus, and he decided to take on a mentee, if you will. And he opened a position for a CEO mentee, and it was pretty much the same process. I still had to apply. It was only open to tribal members. So this is a tribal member position. So it was opened throughout the community. It was open online for tribal members only, and I applied just like everybody else and got an interview, and that was probably one of the hardest interviews I've ever done in my life. And there were a lot of really good, tough questions. And at the end of the day, I did something right because I was fortunate enough to be, given this position. And I've been doing this since the beginning of January. So that's basically what happened with that.
Yeah, congratulations. They made a great
Thank
choice.
You.
Hang on one sec. There's someone that wants to talk to you, and let me just check if they're around. Just hang on one sec. It's a little bit of a surprise.
Uh-oh.
Hang on one sec. I'll see you. You didn't know I was going to surprise you, eh? Hang on. If I can get them on the phone, hang on. Because it's one of these things that I have to see if I can get them. Hang on one sec, okay? So again, I have someone on the phone you might know. So I'm gonna let you talk to him and see if you remember his voice.
Hello, Adriana, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We haven't talked in a long time.
Because
I haven't been in New Mexico.
You haven't been in New Mexico.
Right.
Yeah, he was your first boss.
Conrad.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome.
How are you, Jill?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the GM CEO mentee under Harold Boggess. So
I know. I saw that.
She's being lined up.
Well, that was, you know, if you remember, I kind of started something there that never really got cut. You know, it was, who was it? It was Jeff and Edwin and, what's her name? The three of them?
Francine,
yeah, way back when.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Congratulations. I'm so proud of what you've accomplished. That's great.
Thank you. It's so good to hear from you. I'm so excited. And, in fact, I was just telling Tino earlier, I was like, oh, I saw, you know, that Conrad was on the show, and I had actually listened to your story. And then I thought, and I told him, I was like, he was like my very, very first boss ever in this business. Seems like a whole lifetime ago.
What a great first boss to have.
Well, that's really
what an awesome surprise.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I saw it around there. And, you know, I was I'm traveling a little bit right now, and Tino, you know, made sure that we would connect on your call and everything else. I just want to say how proud I am and everything you've accomplished. And yeah, it's been a long time and a lot of lifetimes ago, but it couldn't happen to a nicer person. But you know, sounds good.
Thank you.
To see Harold for the first time through Tino at Baga this year. So we had a real good chat
and
everything else of everything he's doing down there because I had never met him before. So good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
he's a really good guy. I'm really lucky.
Good. Well, I got the buckle shoot. So if you ever have anything you need or whatever, any questions that come up, please give me a call. To, you know, anytime.
Awesome.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Huge,
I appreciate it.
They're doing a huge $300 million expansion, a hotel. Conrad's blowing it up there. He's doing it good.
Wow.
Yeah,
good for you. Fun. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've been up here now a little over 5 years. And the property's a great property, and we've had great performance. And now warrants to take us to the next step of having a 20,000-square-foot event center, additional gaming, 400-room hotel. Everything goes along with that, and high-end restaurant, and it really changes the whole face of it. So, but you guys have gone through some of that already since way back when. So
yeah.
We're trying to catch up with you. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well,
so
cool.
Happy to hear from you.
So
great, Conrad.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for. Go ahead.
You got it. So, what's your time frame? Is there a time frame of this? Is when Harold's going to retire, or what's going to happen?
That I'm really not sure of. I'm just kind of 3 to 5 years is kind of like my goal.
Sure. Good.
And I still have a lot to learn. So I'm
what,
only
what
7 months in. I'm only seven months in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's still a while.
Well, one thing to consider, Tino, and also is that we have a tribal business leader program up here, similar type of thing, executive development. Of tribal members that may be a director or a manager. And matter of fact, we just elevated a tribal member into the AGM position, Jesse McDaniel.
Oh, wow.
But we're also doing exchanges. So we have done taken one of our tribal, you know, a tribal member who's going through executive development and actually had them go down to Casino del Sol down in Tucson for a month.
Uh-huh.
And then they sent up 2 people up to our property to kind of see how we do things. and we're actually going to have a webinar and put that out late August to talk more about that and really, you know, have, you know, other tribes do the same thing, to reach out to either other tribes or even non-tribal entities and do, you know, executive to kind of exchange, almost like an exchange team, think of it that way, where you get to see another property and see how they do, you know, certain things or whatever. Because the point I've always made, you know, even since my days at Isleta, you know, it doesn't matter how you get it someplace else. Let's bring the best of all those places and make it right for us.
Right.
And make it right for his muscles. You know, this is what that whole process is about.
It's great.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's
amazing. You know, go down the road and everything else, you know, might be something to look at where we could take one of our executive, you know, tribal business leaders and have them on those lines, and you can come up here and see how we do that.
Yeah, that's something to consider.
Great idea.
Well, good. Well, hey, congratulations again. Tino, thanks for catching up with me.
No problem. Thank you so much, Conrad.
Thanks, Conrad. It's good to hear from you. Take care.
Good to hear from you. Congratulations again. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Great stuff. That was a surprise. Right?
What a surprise. That was awesome.
I thought you'd like that. Hang on one second. This is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Adriana?
Hello. How are you?
Hello. Good. Do you have a question for Adriana?
Yes. Adriana, I'm very, I guess I'd have to say, inspired by your talking of your upbringing. And one of the nice things is we don't know what we don't know for a long period of time, it seems. And when we're young and living in the moment, it's wonderful. Have you brought them up with the same type of, earnest commitment, passion for family that you have?
Yes, I'm trying to instill that in my children, and I'm hoping that they're catching on. That was one of the main reasons for us returning back from Vegas was my son was, I believe, 10 or 11 at the time, my oldest son, and I wanted him. He didn't know our language. He didn't really know a lot about our culture, our values, what family meant. He didn't really know a whole lot about the native side of us, and I wanted him to start learning more and more and more about who we are as a people, who we are as a culture, and what, you know, to be that person to make a difference, to be that person to want to make a difference for not just himself, but for his people as well. That's really important to me, because I feel like there aren't enough leaders, you know, in this business that are Native American, and, you know, here we are with our own casinos and whatnot, but, you know, a lot of the times there's just not that education piece that comes with, you know, wanting to run this type of business. So I'm trying to instill that in my boys, and I hope they're getting it, you know. All I can do is hope and pray that I'm being the best parent I can be, and, you know, just kind of hoping that they learn.
Excellent. One other quick question. You've continued to get a great education, and is it something you felt, or is it something that just came in front of you and went, I think I'll do that?
The education piece was something that I had always had my mindset on, and primarily it was because I'm a Native American woman. And what I've learned and what I had seen in the past was, I mean, there aren't a lot of women in leadership as it is, you know, and it's unfortunate, and a lot of it is because of the education piece. But if I thought, well, if I turn that and I use my brain and I get educated and I get this experience, I can be a Native American woman, you know, trying to be out there making a difference. And I'm still learning. I'm learning every day. I have an awesome mentor in Harold. You know, he's great. He's teaching me, you know, about you know, the things that he deals with on a daily day basis, the things that a CEO does on a daily day basis. So it's kind of it's inspiring. And the education piece, to me, in my mind, it's important, but it was something that I've always wanted to do for myself since I was a really young person.
Well, you're very inspiring, and I'm sure you have other people who want to ask questions. Thank you for being on the air tonight. This is wonderful.
Thank you. It's so good to hear from you. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have questions for Adriana?
Hey, Tino. This is JB calling in from New York. How are you tonight?
Hey, good.
So, yeah, I definitely had a question. I mean, you had spoken a lot about your journey up the ladder in the gaming industry. And I'm curious to hear, what are some of the lessons that you learned along the way that you still kind of apply and look to today?
Wow, that's a great question. So it wasn't easy, but I still, in my mind, I always go back to my education. It's not about me. It's about everybody else, my surroundings. How can I make a difference? What can I do to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem? And those are just some of the questions that I ask myself on a daily basis. What else? What more? What more? What more? And that's just kind of what I guess I put myself through on a daily basis, because I have a goal, and my goal is to one day run my casino. And, you know, I think I'm doing, you know, a decent job in starting to get there. It's going to take me a while, being that I haven't done held a position like this ever. But I also have a very good support system. I have a husband who is very supportive. My children are good kids. They teach me. And so it's a lot of different questions or things. I hope I answered your question. I'm sorry.
No, definitely. And I know, you know, these things, when you're speaking about life lessons, that also cross over, you know, with work. It's a, you know, a matrix of things that happen, right? But, you know, a question just kind of on the lines of your management style. And I'm just curious, because you came up the ranks, you know, I'm sure that feeds into your day-to-day style, but, you know, how involved are you in the day-to-day operations, you know, in each department? And, you know, is it kind of harder to not be involved all the time because you came up through the ranks and have seen so many different sides of the gaming industry?
It was, in the beginning, it was a little bit hard for me to back off, especially with the cage, because I was in the cage here for 3 years. So that was a little bit difficult for me to let go of, because there were so many issues and problems with it when I got here. And I think I did a pretty decent job in cleaning it up. And so for a while, it was hard for me to let go. I always wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to know who was doing what. I wanted to know, you know, this, 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 and this. But the flip side was I had to learn how to find a balance to that, because I'm also trying to learn everything about everything else. I'm still trying to learn about hotel, what happens on that side, the maintenance part of it, how that works, the development and the plans that we have going on and how they all come to fold, what food and beverage is doing. So like I said before, I have a really, really good mentor in Harold, and I'm beside him on a daily basis. I attend meetings with him. I'm in everything now. I still struggle daily to let go of the cage, but they have a pretty good manager in there right now, and I have a lot of faith in him to keep it going. And he actually, along with the team down there, we implemented a lot of changes, and we made a lot of changes to make it better, and I think it's still progressing. So,
yeah, great.
You asked if it was hard. It was hard, but I'm slowly learning how to wean myself away from everything and just kind of get into everything I need to be into instead of things that I want to be into because I can't let go.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Great. Thanks so much, JD. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Adriana, we've run out of time. That was amazing. I love the stories and, thank you for so much for coming on the show, and I hope to have you back on again.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Really, really appreciate it. Yeah, and great success on your future, and you know we'll be looking for when you make that big move. That'll be something. Really, be something.
I'll keep you posted. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so
I
much. You have
it.
A great night. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was great stories and really amazing stuff for a Native woman to go through and to prevail and to be able to succeed through all that. She really is special, and I guess that's why she's the GM CEO mentee. I mean, she has those qualities. So we're going to take a little break. We're coming back August 1st, and we'll be at the Casino Marketing and Technology Conference in Las Vegas. And I'll be having a panel there on Wednesday, which is the 24th. It's between 9:45 and 10:45 at Caesars Palace. And I have some great people on the show. I have Brian Uran, who's the VP of Marketing at Maryland Live up in Maryland. And I have Chris Jenner, who's the Director of Digital Marketing for Caesars. And I have the guy I call the Fixer, who Mike Donovan, who keeps turning casinos around and turning them into gold. So, yeah, I have a great panel. I hope you're able to make it. And then on August 1st, I have Shauna Ridgebear. She's the Director of Marketing for Spirit Mountain Gaming. And she's a very, very interesting person. And that continues our Wonder Women of Gaming series. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good night. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Talk to you later. Bye.